It is possible in life to learn by what people tell you, but it is also possible to learn from what you don't hear. Sometimes absence teaches as powerfully as presence. For example, in one of the Sherlock Holmes stories, Holmes says to Watson, "What about the incident of the dog barking in the night?" And Watson says, "But the dog didn't bark in the night." And Holmes says, "That was the incident." Thereby knowing that it wasn't a stranger who had approached the house. Some of the elements on the periodic table were inferred by the presence of elements around them, and they could fill in the absences, learn about the absences by the presence of other things. Sometimes in Talmud class, I remember, we would have to guess what the arguments were that the rabbis were opposing. You had to fill in the absences by the existence of the presence of the arguments on the page. We do that, by the way, in evolutionary science as well. The pronghorn antelope runs faster than any predator, which means that one time in history there had to be a predator that ran faster than any today, or there would be no reason for the antelope to develop that capacity. In other words, we figure out the way the world should be by understanding what we can't see, what's not there, what's absent, what we are missing. Sometimes in conversations, the most powerful thing is the thing that is not said. And people spend their whole lives wishing they had said something, wishing something had been said to them. I bring this up because this week I was suddenly struck by the presence of an absence that I had never noticed before. And yet, once I read it, it seemed so powerful to me that it explained a good deal about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and the Jewish tradition that I didn't even know that I didn't know. It came from this book, which is an English translation and abridgment, a cutting down of a book that was published in Germany by a German rabbi named Benno Jacob. Benno Jacob's book was burned by the Nazis, but a couple of copies survived, as he did, to die in 1945 in London at the age of 85. He was trained at the Conservative Seminary, and his child and grandchild, who were also rabbis, put together an English translation of his work on the book of Genesis, Bereshit, which has become a classic commentary. And I opened it this week to hear what he had to say about Toldot. And this is what he said that struck me. Isaac disappears completely, except for the report of his death after this chapter. On the one side, he is the father of his sons. On the other side, the son of his father. And then he goes on to say, Abraham had not blessed his son as Isaac and Jacob will. A man like Abraham need not bless by words. His life is a blessing for those who observe it. I never noticed that Abraham didn't bless his son. I know that this whole chapter is about Isaac blessing Yaakov and Esau. But it never occurred to me, where did Isaac get the idea to bless his kids? And why didn't Abraham bless him? Now, Rabbi Jacob tries to put Abraham in a good light. He says, well, Abraham didn't need to bless him because, after all, Abraham's life was such a blessing. To which I can only say, with all due reverence for Rabbi Jacob, no way. It's just not true. I understand that it is true that God blesses Abraham, and God says to Abraham, through you, others will be blessed. But I also know that a parent who feels something and doesn't express it, that a husband or a wife or a child who feels something and doesn't express it, that a friend or a lover who feels something and doesn't express it, has cheated the beloved out of something precious. I always thought that the problem that Isaac had to face in his life, because after all, when you read the Torah and you see Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, you realize that Abraham is this powerful, towering figure. Yaakov is this remarkable creator of the people, Yisrael. And Isaac somehow seems to be missing. And you feel something must have happened to Isaac. He is a link between remarkable people, but he himself is more acted upon, is more reactive than a giant of faith. I always felt it must be the after effect of the Akedah. Look what he went through. His father takes him up to the mountain and holds a knife over him. The trauma of that moment must have scarred him for life. But now I'm thinking that maybe it wasn't only the presence, but the absence. Remember Esau's piteous cry when he discovers that Yaakov has been blessed. He says to Yitzchak, don't you have a blessing for me too, Father? I also need to be blessed. And I am certain that when Yitzchak heard that, as so often happens, he thought, my child is expressing my thoughts. I could see him before Abraham thinking, don't you have a blessing for me? I know that you are the founder of this tremendous monotheistic faith that you give so much to the world, but I'm your son. What about me? Don't I get a blessing? Isn't there something left? Not for the world, but for your family. How powerful is this idea of blessing your children? When we finish the book of Bereshit, the book of Genesis, what is the last section of that book? It is Yaakov, Jacob, blessing all of his children. Because Yaakov realizes how much he got from his father's blessing. How important it was. How it changed his life. Yitzchak learned from the absence of his father's blessing. Rabbi Akiva says in the Talmud, it is with great love that God created human beings in the divine image. But it's with greater love that God let us know that we were created in the divine image. In other words, sometimes the expression of love is greater than the love itself. And no phrase is more unsatisfactory than, I don't have to say it, you know I love you. To which the proper answer is, even if I know, you have to say it. Yitzchak didn't get that. And his life, I believe, reflects it. He had a father who was, I think it is fair to say, emotionally unexpressive. After all, it's not until they come to the land of Egypt and Abraham is afraid that Sarah will be taken by the leader of the country that he says to her, now look, I know you're a beautiful woman. It's the first time. I can imagine what Sarah thought. My life should be in danger more often. Thank you very much. Sweet of you to notice. We've been married for 20 years. But the same thing happens to Yitzchak. bring this up not just as a general point, but to remind us, first of all, that every Friday night it is a parent's responsibility to bless our children, to put our hands on their heads, and if it is a boy, to say, Yisimcha Elohim ke Ephraim uchi Menashe, if a girl, Yisimech Elohim ke Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valea, and then recite the priestly blessing. And it's important. It's important for a parent to bless a child. It's important for the children, and it's important for the parents. Because it lets us know, as parents, that we can bring blessing into the world. That we can be part of the divine conduit of blessing, that it can move through us. It doesn't start with us, but it moves through us. But the larger lesson is also true, which is love that is unexpressed is love that is stunted, love that is cut off at the shoots, love that is often not felt. I have no doubt that Abraham loved Yitzchak and that Yitzchak on some level knew it. But I still hear Esav's words ringing in the consciousness of his father. Don't you have a blessing for me? For those people in your life who bless you in one way or another, who love you and whom you love, don't let that cry resonate in their minds as well. Bless them. Express your love to them. Learn from what Yitzhak did not get, but which he created in his own life, that we can, through our words as well as through our actions, bring blessing, comfort, goodness and love into the lives of God's creation and God's world. Shabbat Shalom.